This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I'm joining you this evening from our Lexington, Kentucky studio. I want to thank everyone joining me tonight on Sirius 220, XM 206, and to those of you tuning in via our website at horseracingradio.net. Now, a portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. And I want to tell you all about a very special event coming up on Sunday, February 28th. Gulfstream Park is hosting an event to benefit the PDJF. It's called Jockeys in Jeans. Go to the website, pdjf.org, for more information. Now, my guest this evening is one of 5 finalists for the prestigious George Wolfe Memorial Jockey Award. He's a top rider in Louisiana, a 2-time winner of the Grade 3 Million Dollar Delta Downs jackpot. He has 4,466 wins to his name. His mounts have earned more than $75 million, and those numbers just keep on growing. Gerard Melanson, G Money, welcome to Jock Talk.
Thank you, Christine.
So great to have you here on the show. I've wanted to get you on for quite a while now, and it's great to have you here. And your story, Gerard, I have to say, is incredible. It's one of the greatest, I guess, rags to riches stories that I've maybe ever heard. And I can't wait to tell everyone who's listening about your life and your story. But first of all, I want to ask you a question. How does it feel to be a finalist for that prestigious George Wolfe Memorial Jockey Award? And looking back on your career, what do you feel about that?
Oh, it's very special to me. It really is. I was kind of surprised by it, and because we don't travel a whole lot anymore. We just stay home the last 12, 15 years. And only ride in Louisiana, but it was very humbling to me to be nominated. So I'm very blessed for that.
And to those of our listeners who might not know, the George Wolfe Memorial Jockey Award is decided by fellow jockeys. Fellow jockeys vote on the winner of that prestigious award. And Gerard, tell us a little bit more about that award. And that's not just your successful career, but your overall, you're a great person. And tell us how that works.
Well, I'm not sure exactly how it works, but, you know, I've been very blessed. You know, everybody goes through an up and down career, and I've always managed to keep a positive attitude throughout my career, and I've been very blessed, you know. To get that honor, to be nominated, was like I said, it was shocking to me. I feel a lot of other riders deserved it more than me, probably. But I'm very glad that I got it, and I don't know. I've only heard of George Wolfe and read about him. Apparently, he was a great person for the horse racing industry and an outstanding jockey. And it really flatters me to be in that category.
Gerard.
And, all I try to do is, you know, improve myself and try to help others all the time. And, you know, a lot of younger riders come here and start here. And I'm always out there to lend my hand to them.
You are too humble, Gerard. And we look forward to hearing the winner of that award. That's announced the end of this month. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
So fingers crossed, Gerard. Hopefully we hear very good news about that. So anyway, we wanted to touch on that because that's such a great thing for you. But I always like to start these shows off with going back a few years. I guess you're 48?
Yes, ma'am.
So 48 years ago, you were born in Scott, Louisiana?
Rain, Louisiana.
Rain, Louisiana. Now, my geography is not very good at all. Tell us about where that is.
It's a little town 15 miles east of Lafayette, which is a big city in Louisiana. Not far from where the races are, which is now in the races used to be in Cairn Crow. And because of the casino deal, they had to relocate. And now we're in Opelousas. But we do live here in Scott. We raised our kids in Scott. We've been here for 22 years. And the racetrack's Delta's like a 50-minute drive, and Evangeline's like a 20-minute drive from my house. So I'm home every night. So.
Oh, that's nice. That's very good. Very good location. Very good location. Now, we have so many successful top riders from Louisiana, and I've always wondered what exactly is it about the area that brings up such successful riders?
Well, for a long time, they had a lot of bush tracks in Louisiana where they had match races and so on, where they sold cow cutters instead of mutual windows, and it was like a big deal every Sunday. There was three or four different locations close to the Lafayette area. And a lot of young riders got started there. And that's one of the reasons Louisiana has so many outstanding riders. Before I started, it was getting to the end of the bush track days, which slowed way down in the early 80s. And I managed to ride, you know, quite a few bush track races, but not near like some of the older riders that are older than me that used to ride, like Bobby Walker, Ronald Alderwine, E.J. Paradin, and all of them guys, and all the Patins. I mean, several of them come up riding thousands of match races, you know, and I only got to ride a handful of them, but it was a learning experience. The trainer that brought me up was Manuel Robin, and he didn't want me to go into the bush tracks because, you know, he thought it was too dangerous, and he didn't want me there and not have to sneak off to go over there.
Gerard, we've heard stories about the bush tracks. We've had Randy Romero here on the show, Shane Sellers. You say you only rode in a handful of races on the bush tracks, but are there any particularly interesting stories you have from those days?
Not really. All I can say is I never won a match, a bush track race.
Oh, no.
I mean, I didn't know the people, and actually I'm from the city. And the only horses I had where I'm from was mountain riding ponies. And I'd go to the match races on Sunday. Didn't really know the people there. And the only thing I would get to ride was when one cut a flip and nobody wanted to ride him. So
then you said you would ride those horses.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, when you're 14, 15, you know, nothing scares you. So I just wanted it so bad.
You had guts. So Gerard, tell me how a city boy such as yourself decides that he wants to be a jockey.
Well, I was always small. I came up, my big brother was a boxer, so I became a boxer, and, you know, I played some of the other sports and was fairly good at everything I played, but it was always too small. You know, when I got to high school, football was out of the question. Now, I mean, when I was 10 years old, I weighed 55 pounds. So,
wow. Natural.
And I guess when I was like 12, it hit me to become a jockey. I got introduced to Manuel Robin, who was a top Louisiana trainer, and I worked on his farm for several years before I got my first mount in 84. So
now, growing up in Louisiana as a kid, would you often go to the racetrack and watch the races?
No, not exactly. First time I ever been to the big races was I was a teenager. I was 13. And I don't know, I didn't want to leave from there, you know. And starting at 14 on up, I was at the racetrack, you know, 7 days a week. So.
And you actually dropped out of high school to start riding, yes?
Yes, I sure did, yeah. I had a tough time in school. I wasn't a very good student. I mean, I made the grades I needed to make just to get by. And I don't know, I was a spoiled kid. I was the baby of four. And my brother and two sisters all graduated, and I'm the only one that didn't graduate. But I guess I knew what I wanted. And you know, I don't advise any youngster not to get an education nowadays. I learned a lot of things the hard way, and my life is pretty good now. So
that's awesome. And Gerard, I remember just memories are coming back of staring out the window while I was doing homework or schoolwork, and really wishing I could be outside in the barn. So I can completely relate with you. I never particularly liked school either, so that's in our blood, I guess. But did you have any other family members who got involved with the sport?
No, ma'am. None of them. After several years of me riding, I found out I had two uncles, two of my mama's brothers that were jockeys in the 60s, and they rode a few races at the fairgrounds and stuff. But other than that, no, none of my folks are.
Really?
In the horse races.
Two uncles were jockeys. What did your parents say?
Oh, not a whole lot. I kind of did whatever I wanted my whole childhood life. You know, my daddy was the chief of police of our town most of the time that I was growing up, and he was a house mover. And we owned liquor store and some couple of sports bars and stuff in Rain. And I don't know, I guess kind of my brothers and sisters kind of raised me. But I always got to do whatever I wanted. And, you know, I was really spoiled.
Not
too spoiled, I guess.
Not a bad thing, Gerard. And jockey Gerard Melanson joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Gerard, you started riding in 1984, and you took off very quickly.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. I had a real good bug career. I want to say I won like 140-something races. I think I was third or fourth in the nation for most wins as an apprentice. W.A. Ward, which I got to meet in 2001, which is an outstanding trainer, was the lead, won the Eclipse Award that year. And I think Chris Antley was second, I believe. And that was my first year riding, so.
Pretty good group of riders there, you just mentioned, I would say. You were only 16 at this time, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And so, 16. During the introduction, I said that your story is one of the greatest rags-to-riches stories that I myself have probably ever heard. And that's because right around this time, you're taking off, you're young, The money's coming in, your celebrity at the track, and what oftentimes comes along with that is drinking, drug use, and all of those bad things. So tell us how that first started.
Well, I guess, like you said, a lot of money coming in, got to hanging around the wrong people. I guess from 18 to 22, I was a mess, you know, cocaine and alcohol, which was my two favorites. And, it really took a toll on me and, almost took my life from me. And, finally, in July of 89, I sought help and, I've been sober ever since, so. And I still attend a lot of AA meetings and NA meetings and joining some friends that are counselors, and I go into some sessions with them. And, you know, especially when riders or somebody gets a bad test on the racetrack, I'm always out there trying to help them get sober. I feel the more I help someone, the better off I am. You know, God's been good to me. He really has.
What a fantastic attitude, Gerard. And like you said, that's one of the many reasons why you've been so successful is your great attitude you have. And I want to talk a little bit about that because so many riders do fall into that hole of drugs and alcohol. And it is so common because the weight loss and the pressure and the hard life that is the life of a jockey, and we're so used to having that adrenaline rush all of the time, it's hard to wind down from that, I suppose. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, it's a tough business. It really is. You know, you gotta, you know, just I try to surround myself with positive people all the time. There's a lot of ups and downs. You know, you get taken off of this horse and this trainer fires you and this guy here is bad-mouthing you. And, you know, it's a circus, you know. And as long as, you know, like I teach my son Jansen, you know, you just don't get caught up in that. You don't hold resentments on people. There's a lot of critics around the racetrack, gamblers. They love to knock riders. They love to knock trainers. They love to knock anybody that they lost their money on. And I tell them that all the time. And I try to keep them positive. I said, look, after every race, there's 6 or 7 dissatisfied owners and trainers. I said, if things are slow now, you know, there's always spots opening when you're a jockey. You know, you just be patient and you just keep showing up. And you keep smiling and be nice. You know, that's how I taught both my sons, and I've raised 2 good boys, and we're very proud of them. My youngest one just graduated college and got him a really good job, and Jansen was in an accident Friday night. We had a bad spill Friday night where 5 riders went down, and he broke his foot in like 4 places, but he's not going to have surgery. You know, we went to the doctor yesterday, so that was a real good thing. But he was really down and really upset until that doctor said, oh, no, we ain't going to need surgery, so you'll just be out a few weeks. So, but a couple of other ones wasn't as lucky. Christina, the little girl, Ashley Broussard, who was leading rider, her horse broke down, and she broke a collarbone and several ribs and punctured a lung. And Patrick Boxy broke his right femur. He had to have surgery right away. And Theodore Ledet went down and separated his shoulder and broke 4 ribs. And Eddie Martin went down in the same spill, and he just got bruised up. You know, he was complaining about his lower back and his arm. But he didn't even go to the hospital, and he says he's fine. So, I mean, Eddie's 50, so he knows when he needs the hospital.
Sure.
So, anyhow, it was a bad week this last week, you know.
That's terrible. I'm so glad everyone is okay, will be okay, and including your son, of course. And what is that like for you as a father to watch that? And you know better than anyone about the dangers involved with being a jockey, but what is that like to watch your son out there doing what you do?
Oh, I'm more scared for him than I am for myself, I promise you. Me and the wife was driving back, and we was watching the last race on Horse Races Now. And as soon as I seen him, he went down like 50 yards out the gates. And then further down the track, when he got to the first turn, is when the horse on the lead broke down and three went over that one. Goodness. So I didn't even see the rest of the race. I didn't even see the rest of the crash. We just immediately, I just like threw my phone up. I'm like, turn around, you know, because we were like 20 minutes away from the racetrack on our way home. Mm. And it's me and the wife both are more afraid for him than for me. You know, that's our baby. And
of course,
you know,
how long has he been riding?
He started in, is there 7 years he's been riding?
7 years.
7 years.
What did you tell him when he first decided he wanted to ride?
Well, he rode quarter horses for 3 years. He won a few quarter horse stake races and stuff, and then he broke his thumb. And because he was always heavy. I mean, he rode bulls throughout high school, so he was, you know, in the high 140s. And he struggled to keep his weight down to 125, and he broke his thumb. And something I would never teach him was to flip. You know, a lot of riders flip. And anyhow, Shane Laviolette taught him how to flip, and he got his weight down to 105 pounds, and he decided he wanted to ride Thoroughbreds, and he got his bug, and he went to Delaware and Philadelphia and Indiana, and came back down here, and he rode a couple of summers in Shreveport, where he was third in Fort Leeson rider. And now he's down here with us, so.
Gerard, you mentioned just in just a few moments two of the greatest struggles jockeys deal with, injuries and weight loss. And again, bringing up the drug abuse, it is so hard, the life of a jockey, for so many. And it's understandable how people can sometimes resort to other means. But and you taught your son so well, of course, what not to do. And did they grow up seeing you during that time?
Oh, yeah. Me and my kids were close. Me and the wife and the two boys were always close. We're still really close. And, you know, they both really idolized me. And I don't know, sometimes I think I'm too hard on them. You know, I just, you know, I want them to be perfect. Anybody who has kids wants them to be perfect, you know. And they're going to make their mistakes, you know. Just life. And like I said, you know, I don't know. We're excited that he's a jockey now, though. You know, he just had our first grandbaby 2 months ago. So,
wow, first grandchild, Gerard.
Yeah.
A boy or girl?
Little boy. His name's Emmett Cole Melanson.
Wow.
And he's a doll. He's a doll. I'm sure you've seen pictures on Twitter of him.
I did. Everyone should. By the way, give out your Twitter handle, Gerard, so our listeners can follow you if they like.
We're at Team G Money.
So, folks, there you go. You got to check it out. And you're very good about posting pictures. Your grandson races you win. It's a pleasure to get on Twitter and to see what's going on in your life. And that's actually why I decided to have you on the show, because you just have so many great things going on in your life, Gerard. And of course, it was a long road to that point, but incredible story. Incredible story.
Yes. Last year was a really good year, you know, a grandson and being nominated for the George Wolfe Award. Yeah, it was a special year. A year I will never forget.
Absolutely. And what are some of the career highlights? What are your favorite memories, your favorite horses Tell me about some of those.
Well, my favorite horse was Bonapo. He was a top sprinter. I won my only grade one race with him at Belmont in 01. And he took me to Dubai, and I won stake races on him at Arlington and Prairie Meadows, Evangeline Fairgrounds. And he was a special horse for me. And my most favorite win was probably the Super Derby in 2004 for Bobby Barnett. That was very special because when I was 17, well, actually when I was 16, I went to Louisiana Downs and I got to meet Lafitte Pinquet, who won on Sonny's Halo. And I said, man, I'd like to win this race one day. And I did it 20 years later, so that was one of my special wins.
That's an awesome story. And that was with Fantastic Hat, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
What was he like to ride?
Hey, he was a cool ride. I rode him in the Breeders' Cup, which he was way overmatched as a 3-year-old against older horses, as you know. You see so much. But he was a good ride. He was a good ride. It was special because Mr. Bobby Barnett is really a super, super person. I don't know if you know Mr. Bobby Barnett, but he's really a great horseman, and him and his wife are great people.
We'll continue talking about some of these highlights with jockey Gerard Melanson after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Get ready for the third annual Jockeys and Jeans charity event to benefit the PDJF coming to Gulfstream Park on Sunday, February 28th. Last year, Jockeys and Jeans raised more than $200,000 to benefit permanently disabled riders, and you can help make this year's event even bigger. Meet and mingle with an all-star cast of jockeys, including Lafitte Pinkai Jr., Georgie Velasquez, Pat Day, Randy Romero, and many more. Tickets go on sale at the beginning of January, and donations and sponsorship can be purchased starting December 7th. For more information, visit jockeysandjeans.com. Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. First, let's head to Florida, where Irad Ortiz Jr. had a great week highlighted by stakes wins aboard Lady Shipman and Storied Lady. Ortiz consistently came in the money on 59% of his mounts and finished the week with 4 wins, 5 seconds, and 4 third place finishes. Luis Saez had another good week at Gulfstream as he continues to close the gap on leading rider Javier Castellano. Saez won the Grade 3 Fred Hooper Stakes aboard Tommy Macho while coming in the money on 49% of his mounts. Saez finished the week with 8 wins, 7 seconds, and 4 third place finishes. Gary Stevens continued his solid big race riding at Santa Anita as he won the Grade 3 Robert B. Lewis Stakes aboard More Spirit and the Grade 2 Palos Verdes aboard Kobe's Back. For the week, Stevens finished with 2 wins and 2 second-place finishes. Finally, our Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week, Flavian Pratt, moved up into second place in earnings at Santa Anita with a win in the Grade 2 San Antonio Stakes aboard Hopportunity. The Frenchman came in the money on 65% of his mounts, which helped him lead North America in stakes earnings and total earnings with $460,160. Pratt finished the week with 3 wins, 6 seconds, and 2 third-place finishes. Ride to Win, an inside look at the jockey's craft, is the perfect book for anyone who has wondered what it takes to be a professional jockey. The sport's most prominent jockeys and trainers tell their stories and share their insights on all that goes on behind the scenes. A significant portion of the proceeds go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. For excerpts, testimonials, and to order, visit JockeyTalk360.com. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at JockeyTalk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Rise Up looks to have plenty left. Gerard Malanson is sitting chilly, but here comes Rank Has Privileges. Mighty Brown is under a drive on the inside. Then Cassie Guapo. Big Bazinga has checked out. Coastline is back from there, but it's Rise Up who has the lead. Rise Up went 3/4, 111.94. He's coming to the 16th pole. It's Gerard Malanson. And Rise Up, air up the tires, gas up the tank. He's on the road to the Derby. It's Rise Up in the $1 million Delta Downs jackpot. Cassie Guapo was second, third went to Rank Has Privileges, and fourth was Roman Unbridled.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Christina McManigal here, joined tonight by jockey Gerard Malanson. Gerard, what an incredible race and an incredible ride, I have to say, on Rise Up in the 2013 Delta Downs jackpot. What, you have to get goosebumps when you hear that replay.
Yes, ma'am, I do.
What kind of a horse was he to ride?
Oh, he was very, very cool. Actually, I won on him like 3 weeks ago. I mean, as far as that day, he was just perfect. And, you know, the race set up really good for me. And it kind of let me do what I wanted on the front end. And it was a special day for me.
Now, I believe you are the only jockey to win that race twice. Is that correct?
Yes, I was until this year. DeZarmo won it a second time.
No. Well, still, that is a very impressive feat, and you won it twice in the span of 3 years, which is just an incredible feat.
Right.
And you rode Rise Up for trainer Tom Amos, and describe your relationship with trainer Tom Amos.
Me and Tom, we get along good. He's been really good to me for years. Actually, I met Tom when he was an assistant trainer for Frankie Brothers, when I was riding for Frankie Brothers in the early 80s. And, we developed a good relationship. I know what he wants. You know, I know how he wants his horses ridden. And, I'm just straight up with him, you know. I just tell him the truth, and that's all he wants, you know. Every now and then he gives me a hard time on a certain horse I ride or something. but I understand, you know. He's a tough man. He's a tough trainer to ride for. But we've had so much success, you know, Christina. He's been really good for me.
Now, you mentioned Gerard telling a trainer more about their horse, and that is very important. And you have to have the ability to feel certain things about a horse, get a sense of what they like and what they don't like. And given that Rise Up, when you won the Delta Downs jackpot, he was a 2-year-old. That has to be especially important for those young horses.
Right. I rode him in the prep race in the Jean Lafitte, and he laid second and off of a fast horse, and he went on to win that race pretty easy. And the way the jackpot set up, I had the outside hole, and he broke sharp, and I was easy to, you know, I was, you know, I had a really good trip. I got to get him all the way over to the rail and slow the pace down, and I mean, it was a dream trip. And, you know, in the bull ring, nobody wants the 10 hole, but, the outside post going a mile and a 16 is not really bad at all. Now, 6.5 furlongs, it's a bad hole. 7 furlongs even, you don't have that much time before you get to the turn to be able to save ground. And it could be very costly having, you know, the 9 or the 10 hole going 6.5 and 7 furlongs. But anything further than that, it's not that bad.
Now, Delta Downs is a 6-furlong track, and that I've ridden at Charlestown, and those kind of racetracks are particularly tricky. And describe how you ride that track differently than at a different track.
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, the track, you know, is off and on. Some, you know, a lot of times speed carries really well, and a lot of times it doesn't. You know, half the time it does, and half the time it doesn't. It depends on the humidity and how much rain we have and stuff. And because the track is all sand, and it's not every day that it's the same. You know, usually after the first 2 or 3 races, you can tell where you need to be. And, but the way I ride it is just, first of all, I try to get on the best horse in the race.
Good advice.
And, you know, just get in good position and, you know, save ground. You have to save ground, you know, especially on a bull ring. I mean, any track you have to save ground, and, especially on a bull ring, that's usually, I mean, I usually have a plan before every horse I ride, and, I always have a backup plan on, you know, what I want to do.
Sometimes.
But a lot of times, you know, as you being a rider, when the gates opened, all the plans you had then went out the window, so.
That's exactly right. You just.
But I've been lucky to be able to ride the better horses here. And I've been blessed. I got a great agent, Louis Coco. We've been together for years. And he does a good job of keeping me off of bad horses and getting me on good horses.
How long has he been your agent?
Throughout my career, probably 17 or 18 years.
Wow.
But he's been my agent since I started back at Delta in 10 years, 06, 07, I believe.
Describe that relationship as far as you guys must know each other very well by now. You walk the barns together in the mornings, or how do you two work together?
No, I'm very fortunate. I see him like once a week to bring his check, and that's about it. No, I don't. I don't walk the barns anymore. I'll go and work a few horses from time to time, but not very much at all, Christine. I'm really blessed. You know, we have a couple of guys that work the horses for us at our main stables at Delta. And over here by the training center, I'll go once or twice a week and get on a few horses, like for Sam Bro and Steve Flint and some of my trainers that train off of the training center. But I'm not very much on work. You know, I work 25 years, 5 o'clock in the morning. And I don't get it no more.
You paid your dues, Gerard. You definitely paid your dues.
I mean, if things got slow, you know, I know what to do, you know. I mean, I'm not scared to go and find mounts. I'm very blessed.
Do you like to test ride, I guess you could say, a horse in the mornings before you ride that particular horse in the afternoon, or maybe your better horses? Do you like to work them in the morning?
Not exactly. No, I mean, like Rise Up, I've never sat on him except in the race, you know. Tom would keep him at the fairgrounds, train him at the fairgrounds, and ship him here. And around April and May, when the babies start getting ready, I like to get on them. You know, I've been lucky to win several fraternities over here, and being on the good 2 year-olds, and I like to learn them and be with them and have confidence in them before I ride, you know, first time, second time starters that seem to have promise to them.
What is it about those babies that you like?
Well, you just, the people that, like Steve Flynn, he's always got the top babies here from Mr. Carol Castillo. He trains for Whisper Notes. And I've been doing all that riding since Flint started training for him 3 years ago. And we've won a lot of stake races and fraternities together. And you always start off with 30 or 40 two-year-olds, which are really, you know, and he finds the good ones and lets me get on them whenever they're getting close to a race. So just to get a feel of them and to where I can trust them, you know. Because being an Evangeline, you know, you got a lot of small trainers that, you know, they come from the farms and stuff, and with their babies, and they're half broke, and you know, I'm not no.
You don't want to ride
those. I'm not like I was when I was 15 years old.
Oh, let me ride that one. He's flipping over. Right. Yeah, no, you don't need to do that anymore.
Right.
No, but I always liked riding those young horses as well, because you can teach them along the way, and it's
right.
It's a great experience to follow a horse along his or her career that you've basically helped teach along the way.
Right, exactly. And it makes a big difference on a young horse to put all your trust in him, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, it really does.
Those young babies, you got to know what you've got. You got to know what you
right.
got. Gerard.
Yeah.
Now, you were describing your ride aboard Rise Up, and you have an excellent skill for judging pace. And would you say that's kind of your preferred riding style, is to get out on the front end and slow it down?
No, not exactly. No, actually, I prefer coming from off the pace. I mean, for a long time, I was one that really, really liked to come from way back more than anything. But on a bull ring, you know, it's hard to do that, you know. It's a challenge. I like to be up close on the pace if the pace is slow. And I recognize pretty quick, you know, how fast we're going. And I got a mindset on who I have to beat in the race, you know, and I'll always pick out two or three horses that I know I have to beat. And you know, before I leave the jocks room, you know, I like to look at the odds and see if some big money got on a certain horse. And sometimes, you know, you just got to make a plan to outdo them, you know, and keep an eye on where they are in the race and figure out how to beat them.
Now, describe how you do that. That is a very difficult skill to learn, judging exactly how fast you're going. And that, to people, can sometimes seem crazy to say that you know exactly how fast you're going to the second. How do you learn how to do that?
A lot of practice. Actually, I really learned it working a lot of horses for Asmussen. And I really got a feel for the times as far as, you know, how fast you're going in a lot of workouts. But in a race, you always know how fast you're going, and you can tell if they're going too fast in front of you or not. And in every race, there's going to be your 3 or 4 40-to-1 shots that I kind of block them out, and I always pick the 2 or 3 that I have to beat. I don't know, it's like my wife calls my racing form my Bible. You know, I got so many books on my racing form. It's a must have before I ride a race, you know.
Do you
that's a strong part of me. And was trying to outsmart somebody and trying to win a race, you know.
Now, do you handicap not only the horses, given you have the daily racing form there, but do you watch replays of your horses and other horses, and do you handicap the other jockeys you're riding against?
100%. You're absolutely right. I do it all. I watch the races. I watch the replays. I know which jockeys are riding which horse. I know which jockeys prefer to be on the front end, if he's a speed rider, if he's a patient rider. I do a lot of homework, Chris. I really do.
There's nothing like being prepared, Gerard. That's fantastic. And so describe to us maybe your typical day. You wake up, you maybe don't have to work any horses that morning, and you study the daily racing form. Do you have to hit the hot box or watch your weight before you ride?
No. I've been weighing the same for 20-something years. Actually, I have a farm with 10 acres, and I have some brood mares and some babies. And, I spend some time outside, a lot of time outside, doing whatever I want, you know. And I don't know. We just pretty much, my wife is a beautician. She has her own beauty shop attached to our house. So she's been doing that for like 15 years. And I don't know. We really got it made, you know. We really enjoy our life and our time together.
Jockey Gerard Melanson joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Gerard, you've pretty much stayed there in Louisiana your whole career. Why did you never decide to, say, go to Kentucky or New York? Why did you stay there?
Okay, well, like I said, when I was young and dumb, I did some stupid things. You know, I was involved in a bad deal in New Orleans. Actually, I was 18 years old, you know, and I was involved in a race fix. And after all of that and everything, at 22, when I got sober, I was sober for 2 years, and I had a derby mount. And I went over to Kentucky, and I knew the trouble I had got in before. You know, I knew what I was up against, and I went over there, me and my wife, and Jansen was just 3 or 4 years old, and maybe he was 5, I'm not sure exactly. But I got over there, I was working a bunch of horses, I was riding the card the first weekend, and went to get my license, and Bernie Heddle refused to give me a license, and we fought him, went to court and everything else. And in Kentucky is like one of 3 states that it's a privilege to be a jockey. Kind of like a driver's license in Louisiana. If they don't want to give you a driver's license, they don't have to give you a driver's license. And he refused to give me a jockey's license. So until last year, when I got Tom Amos and Maggie Moss to help me, and my thanks goes out to them. Until last year, I wasn't allowed to ride in Kentucky. I can ride in every state in the country but Kentucky.
Wow. I'm sorry to hear that. That had to be so frustrating.
It was, because I don't know if you know Bernie Heddle. He was the head of the racing commission in Kentucky for years. I don't know where he is now, but he told me, and he told Johnny Beach, won't be no problem, come on down, we'll be glad to give him a license. And so we moved all my stuff, got us an apartment and everything, worked horses for 2 weeks, and had a mount in the bluegrass, and the horse I was going to ride in the derby, and he decided that he wasn't going to give me a license, so.
Wow, so you moved. You completely uprooted yourself and moved, and then found out that you couldn't ride here.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, that was the worst thing happened since I've been sober, so I'm very fortunate.
But this year you are allowed to ride in Kentucky, yes?
Yes, ma'am.
So we can look for you on the first Saturday in May?
Oh, I don't know. I wish. I wish, Chris. It just there's not many Derby horses come through Delta in advance.
Well, you know, but fingers crossed sometime very, very soon, Gerard. I very much hope to see you here in Kentucky very soon. And tell us, what do you have coming up? Any big horses that you're excited about to ride?
Not exactly. No real big plans right now. We got like 5 weeks left here at Delta, and then we have a little time in between. But, just day to day, nothing special. Actually, my agent just called me a while ago before you called and said they didn't use Rise Up's race again. There was only 6 horses in the race. They didn't use it. They could have waved as hot, but, you know.
Oh, no.
But no big stake races in the near future that I know of right now. We had our big day for Saturday night where we had giving out $1 million in purses. We had 8 stake races Saturday night, and I was lucky to win one. And but nothing offhand right at the moment.
Well, Gerard, I remember calling you last week, actually. We were going to do the show last week. Unfortunately, I came down with the bug. And when I talked to you on the phone, I said, so how's it going over there in Louisiana? You said, oh, it's going just fine. I went 5 for 5 last night, just so nonchalantly.
Right.
I was laughing all day because it was
it was a really good night. Yeah, it was a good night.
No big deal to Gerard because he does that pretty regularly.
Not exactly, but I mean, my agent does get me on really live mounts. I'm very blessed. He gets me on really live mounts. Louis Coco is... You know, he is the best in Louisiana, and I'm very fortunate to have him. He's a good friend of mine, too.
Well, you got to bring him home, too, Gerard, so give yourself credit for that. And you are, after all. Tell us how that started. Your nickname is G-Money, which makes perfect sense.
That started so long ago, Chris, since when I was a bug boy. When I was a bug boy, a lot of the guys hanging on the fence started calling me that. a lot of the railbirds, I guess you call them, they the one come up with that name. And I never, I've had it ever since.
That's awesome. Hey, the name stuck, obviously, for a very good reason.
Yeah, well, I've been lucky. I've won a lot of stake races for staying around here. And like I said, God's really blessed us, me and my wife and my 2 boys.
I got to tell you, Gerard, when I was doing my research for this show, I found a Gerard Melanson trading card for sale at Amazon, which it must be pretty popular because there's only 3 of them left. Did you know about that?
Really? I thought those were so cool. And I thought the Guild was going to start it up again a couple of years ago, and I don't know what happened. But I really enjoyed them, you know.
Well, to those of our listeners who would be interested, Amazon.com, there's only 3 left, so go grab one while you can. Gerard, I hear you all, you're a pretty good poker player, is that right?
Oh, I try. I haven't played much since the grandbaby's end, though. Usually on a Monday or Tuesday, I'll pick one of the days and I'll go and spend a few hours playing poker. There's always a good game in Lafayette, a private game that I'm always invited to. I hold my own.
You're too humble, Gerard, because I've heard that you're pretty good at that, too. You're also a chef, a Cajun chef, according to your Twitter. Oh.
Yes. Yes, I like to cook. We have 3 kitchens, actually.
3 kitchens?
Yeah, we got a kitchen in the barn, we got a kitchen in the outdoor kitchen, and we got our kitchen in the house. So
that's awesome. Plenty of opportunities to cook.
What's that? Oh, yeah. I enjoy cooking.
I've never been to Louisiana, and I've been hearing about how I've got to go there just for the food.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, you gotta come.
Obviously yeah. So. And Gerard, tell us what is next for you. And of course, you are 48. Do people ever ask you, when are you going to retire? I mean, you're going strong.
I get totally sick of it.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
I guess they think it's like a football player, basketball player. You know, after they hit 30, they're no good anymore. But it's not the same as a jockey.
Not at all. You've proven them wrong.
Boo-Boo Clark's still riding strong. He's 57 years old. So many riders that are still older than me that are still doing good. As long as I stay healthy and not fall too many times, I plan on riding for a while. So I have no time limit set for me to retire.
Well, we just had Tony Black on the show, and he's way up there. So you're doing just fine, Gerard. And
right. Is Tony still riding?
He's not currently riding. He says he's got to have two more winners before he retires.
Because he's like 62, right?
Yes. Yes.
And he won like 5,200 races?
Yeah, but he says he's got to have two more wins. He won't retire for good until two more wins. But, you know, that's Tony for you.
I hear you.
Gerard, we're almost out of time. And this has been just what a fantastic hour we've spent here with you. And we wish you all the best. I cannot wait to hear about the George Wolfe Memorial Jockey Award. And my fingers are crossed for you. I hope we hear your name announced.
Well, thank you, Christina. It's been a pleasure.
I'm wishing you all the best there in Louisiana, Gerard. If you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Now, it is my opinion that Jock Talk is the greatest show, but we are not the only show on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We've got something for you nearly every day of the week. Check out the full schedule. Again, go to horseracingradio.net. Now, be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal. Thank you for listening.